G'day punters, welcome back to the AFL Lions season 2015. We're about to kick off our final pre-season podcast. Sting, what's going on, mate?
Well, for those of you who have listened to the first two of these, we're basically doing a turbocharged version of the punter's guide that was in written format in 2013, 2014, running through each side, brief synopsis of their sort of chances this year, where we think they're going to struggle, where we think they're going to do well. And most importantly of all, where you're going to find some value, both in terms of futures markets for the season as a whole, and also some trends to keep an eye on a week-to-week basis. We've gone through the bottom six in the first podcast and the middle six from last year in the second podcast, and we move on now to last year's top six. And we kick things off with North Melbourne, who were sixth on the ladder last year with 14 wins, but did find their way into a preliminary final thereafter. $3.25 for the Kangaroos to make the top four, $1.50 to make the eight, or $16 to win the flag.
Yeah, look, we backed them for the top four last year, and as you say, they made the prelim, so...
Didn't get paid,
but there was always going to be there or thereabouts, I think, with North Melbourne. They look a bit more rounded this year. They've added some depth at both ends of the ground with, you know, Joel Tippett to come on. Obviously, Jared Waite comes in to give a chop out to those other blokes. Petrie, obviously. Benny Brown's coming on really, really well. He looks a really exciting type. They've got kids like Mason Wood who are just look like they're ready to play some really good footy. They structure it well across the ground. They've got really good balance both inside and outside. They've got the real hard inside players like the Swallows and the Cunningtons, and then they've got your Wells and your Dalsanos on the outside. They've got a really good flow to them at the moment, and as I said, they're very strong at both ends of the ground. So I absolutely think they'll make the top four this year, and I'll be taking every bit of that $3.25 and I might spend it on something for me.
Very good. A couple of trends to keep in mind across the season. Kangaroos have been very good the last couple of years in matches in Victoria. They've covered 20 out of 31 overall. They don't play that often at the MCG, but they've been really good when they have played there in the last couple of years, covering 5 out of 6. And as is the case with unfashionable sides, bless them, they get around as dogs of more than 15.5 more often than they should, covering 8 out of their last 10. Love those sides that no one particularly cares about. And suddenly they sneak around as 4-goal underdogs against someone and they either win or they go bloody close to it.
That's it.
I mean, back in North at the plus for about 15 years now, I don't intend to stop. They're going to be right on the fringe of that top four battle. I think we've got a clear top three and then one spot up for grabs. And they're in that mix. So 3.25, probably a little bit of overs. I think they're a better price there than one of the others we'll come to shortly.
Absolutely.
But I could take or leave that price. I think it's a little bit overs, but probably not enough for me to jump in.
We'll see.
All right, we'll just move on to the next side. So we'll move on to Port Adelaide, who finished fifth on the ladder last year with 14 wins, but as was the case with the Kangaroos, won their way through to a preliminary final last year and nearly a spot in the grand final. This year, though, the market has found them. $5.50 to win the flag, $1.90 to make the four, and $1.22 to make the eight.
Well, again, don't really want to tie up money to $1.90 for the duration of the season, but we back them at $1.90 every week. So this is just one more of those, and we'll have to wait a little bit longer to get paid, I reckon. Get on them for the top four. They are morals, mate. Absolutely in the top three sides in the competition and could very easily make a claim to be the hardest running side in the comp. Paddy Wright is a massive in for them, provided that he plays, of course. Gives them a lot of flexibility. I just love the way they go about it. I've said this to a heap of people in recent times, that if I was new to football now, I'd absolutely be a Port Adelaide supporter. They work really hard, but they've got a really good balance of potency and flair as well with your guys like your Robbie Grays and your Chad Wingards that do the, you know, the things that keep the fans coming back, and then you've got your Eberts and your Bokes and these guys that are inside. Jay Schultz is a very underrated full forward. He's a really good quality forward, and their back six stacks up really, really well. So I'll be taking that one on, I think. I had a bit of a look through, and I've had just the one pre-season Brownlow nom for me out of across the 18 sides, and Robbie Gray, unbelievable last year. He'll be noticed by the umpires more again this year, I believe, and if he can stay healthy, $18 is massive overs for him. He should be on the first line of betting.
Very good. I love the Power this year. I think they're a red-hot chance to win the light. I'd rather take $5.50 about them than the shorter prices for Sydney Hawthorn. They won't get around as underdogs too many times this year, but they have been terrific as underdogs across the last two seasons, particularly when they do go on the road. They went on the road as underdogs 6 times last year and covered the lot. I'm very much going to be taking the plus when they go to Subiaco in round one, even though it's only half a goal. And they do seem to actually be able to pace themselves now. They remind me a little bit of Geelong over the last couple of years. When they go on the road and they're laying 6-7 goals against rubbish sides, they do enough to win and leave a bit in the tank, and they actually haven't covered any of the 6 where they went on the road last year against god-awful sides, yeah, a couple of which I actually laid the points. Won't be doing that again this year.
It's a good call. And they've got that depth where they're able to really manage minutes and players, and you know it's not that helpful either. I think Hinkley's very clever in that regard, where you don't see a lot of the other coaches do that. They don't like to mess around with their structures and the way that they sort of attack the game. But Hinkley does it really, really well, and he manages his team. And I think it's just by virtue of the fact they've got so many options through the midfield. Yeah, they can absolutely win the flag this year. I think they're probably in the top two. The top two recommends for me.
Yep. Well, I hope they win round one, because if they win round one, they edge a little closer to that top four than the other side they'll be taking on, which are the Dockers. Here we come to now. Fourth on the ladder last year with 16 wins, but got bundled out in the second week of the finals. This year, they're $9 to win the flag, $1.95 to make the four, and $1.20 to make the eight.
Yeah, look, I think the Dockers will drop off quite a bit this year. Out of everything that's there, the thing that probably represents the most value to me is 4.15 to miss the eight. I don't think they'll drop that far, but they can't win the flag, and I don't believe they'll play in the top four. Of those four options, that's the only one that's in play for me. Mm-hmm. They've got an ageing list, and a lot like Carlton, they've had blokes going out with retirements and trades and all those other bits and pieces, but they've just brought nothing in. Mm. And that seems to be... Mick Malthouse has got his own plans, but Ross Lyon's always been a bit like that. He's preferred.
He did that at St Kilda.
Yeah, he doesn't top his list up with, you know, I would have really thought they would have gone harder to look like a Rowan Schoenmakers type that can play key post at both end of the ground when you've got aging players like Pavlich, and I think McFarlane may have even retired, but I'm not sure if he's even going around again. But these type of blokes, someone like that who's obviously not an elite player, but just someone who can do a job for you and be a target. You know, they've got some good young key forwards on their list, but no one that's knocking the door down by any stretch of the imagination. Obviously got a good midfield, guys like Fife and those sorts of guys, but Fife can't be expected to get 40 touches and kick 6 goals every week. And I personally think that I don't want to preempt anything here, but if Ryan Crowley's found guilty and banned, his loss to that side will not be underrated. I personally think... He's a tagger, yes, he's a tagger, but I make the argument that Ryan Crowley, across the last 2 years, has been the most consistent and the most effective midfielder in the competition, barring none. He's beaten maybe once or twice a year, and he plays on the absolute best every week. So I personally think that he will, if he misses, they're a massive chance to miss the eight.
Yep. But,
It's probably not quite long enough for me, given that there'd have to be an extra couple of teams pushed through, which maybe an Adelaide or something like that could get it over them and they could fall right out. But if anyone of that top four teams, top five from last year is going to really fall from grace, it'll definitely be Fremantle.
Yep. I mean, they do have a slightly cheaper draw than a number of the others who were in the top five or six last year, and a significant home ground advantage, which I think will be enough to get them into the eight, but I could see them in a similar sort of realm to your Richmond's. Bottom, you know, clear bottom half of the eight. I would much rather take North Melbourne and or Geelong at $3.25 for the four than Freo at a little bit better than half that price.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's a myth, that market. Like, there is no way that Fremantle should be more favoured than those other two sides for mine. I think that's a joke. They're well and truly back on North Melbourne and Geelong in terms of what they're actually capable of putting on the park this year.
Best week-to-week trends for the Dockers have to do with how many days rest they've had. They've covered 26 out of their last 36 off a 7-day break or more, including 13 out of 17 last year. They've covered only 2 out of their last 13 off a 6-day break or less, including losing all 7 last year. Wow. Ross Lyon sides off a short break. That's the time to take him on.
He must just pizzle him on Monday at training or something, does he? I don't know. What are you doing over there, Roscoe?
Well, it's the same sort of problem here at St Kilda. He just seems to work sides into the ground. They have a brief premiership window and they're right there when the whips are cracking. Mm. And indeed, St Kilda, the year after they lost the replay, finished seventh and then he was out the door. Yeah. And I could see Fremantle falling to a similar spot and I could see Ross Lyon leaving at the end of the year. Well, deciding that his moment with this side has peaked. He's not the big one for rejuvenating sides.
I think they're pretty fickle over there too. I think Mark Harvey got him to eighth and he got the spear. So yeah. If they finish around that mark, he might be fill your boots somewhere else, Roscoe. Mm.
So I think around that sort of 6th, 7th position, 13, 14 wins, but I think they might top them out. We move on now to Geelong, who finished 3rd on the ladder last year with 17 wins, but also got bundled out in the second week of the finals. Pretty similar prices to North Melbourne, actually. $15 for the premiership, $3.25 for the top four, and $1.50 to make the eight.
Yeah, and that's realistic. That's where they are. It's North Melbourne and Geelong are fighting it out for fourth spot, basically. I don't see anyone else really in that frame. Possibly Richmond if they get a really good run on and stay strong with injury, and the other two teams maybe fall back a little bit. But we've underrated Geelong massively the last couple of years. We keep waiting for them to fall off, but the fact of the matter is they just haven't done that. And it's because they've got an outstanding side. You look at their best side across the paddock. Harry Taylor leads a really underrated defensive setup down there. Their midfield's obviously elite. You've got your blokes like Andrew Mackie and Corey Enright doing whatever the hell they want off halfback. Big Tommy Hawkins down the goal square, throw Mitch Clark and then a resting ruckman down there. All of a sudden, they're a really big forward line with some good quality crumbing forwards as well. They're right in that. They're right in that market. But I think North Melbourne are probably just going to edge them out this year. I think they've probably just got a little bit more and a bit of a cheaper draw as well, I believe. So North Melbourne for mine. So I won't be taking the 3.25 on Geelong. Parlaying those two, really, but I won't be doing that. I did find one market that interested me, though. Again, it's just a player exotic. Harry Taylor, he's the number one intercept marking player in the competition, and they do tend to flip the ball around a fair bit in the back half and takes a fair few cheap marks. And there's a market available for Harry Taylor to take 10 grabs or more in 5 games this year, 5 or more times this year. And that's paying $3.50. Now, he's done that 14 times in the last 2 years, so I think that's a little bit of value as a sneaky throw at the stumps if you've got nothing else to
Absolutely.
Do.
Absolutely.
Which I generally don't.
Well, the stats say it's a better than 50-50 proposition. Absolutely. If you get $3.50 about that, you should be taking it. I'm a bit the inverse in terms of thinking about Geelong and North Melbourne. I'd rather take the $3.25 Geelong just because I'm sick of the buggers proving me wrong. They just find ways. I mean, one of the things that I think has made the market react is that they did win 7 of their 8 close games last year. So that 17 wins could easily, in a different set of circumstances, have been 14 or 15, but that would still put you right in the mix for the 4. And they know how to win those games, and that's still worth a bit. So even if you said...
And that's your Selwood and your Bartell and your Stevie Johnson and your Corey Enrights and these guys.
Well, especially your back six, your Harry Taylor, just blokes who can compose and hold the footy and know what to do.
They've played in 5 grand finals over a decade together.
Mm.
You can't buy that kind of experience, and that falls in the argument that I made the other day or earlier about poor teams losing those games. They struggle under pressure.
Mm.
They cannot make the right decisions, and the other team invariably does. And it's a bounce of the ball either way. But if you're making the right decisions, that ball's going to bounce you away more often than not.
Absolutely. I mean, even in the Geelong North Melbourne semi final last year, when the Cats came roaring back late, I was very confident that they would find a way to get across the line, and very surprised when they didn't.
Absolutely.
Alrighty, now we move on to two of the Premiership big dogs this year. Firstly, the Sydney Swans, who 17 wins last year, but got dusted in the grand final.
Say, boys.
This year, $4.50 to make amends and win the flag. $1.36 to make the 4, and well, everything else is a bit too short, really.
Yeah, look, I don't like Sydney for the flag this year. I think it's a race in two. They could surprise, but $4.50 is not juicy enough for me to get involved. I'm sure you'll go through some in-season trends for them later on this year, but Yeah, look, they're a mile for the top four. They're in the best three sides in the competition. Those three sides have got a streak on the rest of the comp at the moment, I think. Yeah, they'll be singed. They'll be really stinging from the way they had their pants pulled down in the last game of last year. They were embarrassed in that grand final, so that gives them, I guess, a bit of a crutch to come out this year and have a red hot go. But I mean, yeah, what are you there for? You're there to win flags. Mm. What added motivation do you need than having a team that has the capacity to win a grand final,
yep,
to get up and about? Yeah, look, they've just got so much talent across the ground. It's scary. But I think, if anything, they're just a little bit weak backward of centre. They don't have the capacity to stop the really good attacking teams. You know, Richards is all right. Grundy's serviceable, but then it falls away pretty quick after that. Now, again, this is a pretty short market I found, and a little player friendly, but Kurt Tippett is all myth, this bloke, for mine. He's mate, with his frame, he should be kicking 17 goals a week. Unbelievable. They just sit on his head, take the goal, keep the mark, kick the goal. But he hasn't done that. He's averaged under 2 goals a year, 2 goals a game across his career. He's had his fair share of injuries. I reckon he's a 16 to 18 game a season player maximum.
Yep.
And they've set the line for Kurt Tippett season goals at 57.5, and I think that's about 15 too many. So even though it's $1.90 either side of that, I'm certainly going to get on the under of that, and I reckon you'd be out of your mind not to as well.
That's a lot of dollars per goal with Kurt Tippett's salary too. I don't know. Given that the Swans got Franklin, I wonder if they'd like a do-over on the Tippett deal. I mean, it does give him a second target, but gee, they'd lock up a lot of money.
Well, he's going to play a lot of minutes in the ruck as well. Mm. I mean, because there's only Mike Pike that they've got there, really. I mean, Derek's a Derek. He's not a very good footballer. So they're not going to carry those three blokes. Derek's played last year because Tippett was out injured, which he will be at times this year again, I would imagine. But look, I think in latter years, after the ANZ Stadium deal is closed and they are back to playing every home game at the SCG, that sort of environment probably suits him a lot better, because it's a kick from the midfield to the goal square, and that's where he eats his breakfast. But on those bigger grounds, I think he's really struggles hitting the game. And Sydney score more of their goals from outside 40 than any other team in the competition. It's the complete opposite of Hawthorne, who score most of their goals from inside 30. So that sort of key hotspot where Tippett tends to roam is a bit more of a dummy area for those guys. So, I think that's 15 too many, and I wish they were giving us more money for it.
Well, you touched on before Sydney getting their pants pulled down in the grand final last year. I think one of their big problems is their really poor record the last couple of seasons at the MCG. I mean, the 2012 grand final really was the outlier. In fact, if you go over the last four or five seasons, they've covered one of their last eight at the MCG, none out of four last year. Their trends in terms of totals are a bit like the West Coast and Gold Coast, but not as strong. But they are a good side for the over in the day and a good side for the under in twilight and night games. But unless they figure out a way to win at the G, they're not winning a flag.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I think it's... they've got really good inside midfielders, but Jetta, possibly Rowan, are they're really only dash outside midfielders. I think they'll really miss Malcheski coming off the back half this year. They will absolutely murder teams that aren't up to snuff. Yep. But the harder running teams that cover the space really well, like the Hawthorns and the Port Adelaide, North Melbourne as well, I think will absolutely be a match for Sydney this year.
Speaking of winning flags, we come to the two-time-in-a-row premiers, Hawthorn. 17 wins last year, back-to-back flags.
Stop it.
$4 to win a third in the trot. Can they do it? Stop it.
Of course they can. Of course they can.
Will they do it?
Absolutely they will. I was tossing up. I think it's a race in two. I think it's Hawthorn, Port Adelaide for the flag this year. As always, there's other teams in that market, but the head says that those two teams, they're the two hardest running teams, they're the two best attacking teams in the competition, and I think the way that the game has shifted again from that that Paul Roos mid-2000s bastardisation of football where the flag was in vogue and six goals will win you a grand final. That's completely gone now. The wheel's been reinvented again and it's back to more attacking style football. You know, I think that was 2013 was one of the lowest scoring seasons in memory, and then last year it really took a jump back up. And I think that's only going to increase. Coaches have realised that to win games of footy, you have to put a score on, because teams can just score so quickly. 5 and 6 goal leads just aren't enough.
Yep.
So people aren't sitting on those leads trying to protect. So I think those two sides are absolutely best, and I think I'd rather take $4 about Hawthorn than $5.50 about Port, purely because if I'm going to put my money down, I might as well back the team that I love with. So I've got something to cheer about.
They're definitely the two most fun sides to watch.
Absolutely, absolutely. And look, Hawthorn have done really well again. They've added strength to their back line, bringing in Chip Frawley. So Josh Gibson is now legitimately the small forward. He doesn't play on your Travis Cloakes and those types anymore. They've got depth in the ruck with Segler, Hale and McAvoy, which they've never had in living memory. They've got a great mix of experience and youth through the middle of the ground, and they've got the best forward set up in the game. Well, they had 3 blokes kicked over 50 last year, 8 different blokes kicked over 20 goals. They're really unselfish. They move the ball into clever areas of the ground, and they will always give that handball over the top, take that short pass to a bloke who's 10 metres closer to goal just to try. And that's, you know, and they make the most of their opportunities, both like Bruce and Gunston, just kicking at 80, 90%. There's just so much to like about it. And the way they won it last year with missing key players for big chunks of the season, Clarko away for 5 weeks, just so much character out of that. I think that the belief that group would have would be absolutely resounding at the moment, and I think that they'd fancy themselves to do anything. So on top of that, $4, a little sneaky throw at the stumps again for me. Jed Anderson, who's been on the Hawthorn list for a few years after I think he came over from GWS, he's still eligible for the Rising Star, and I think he's previously been nominated 2 years ago. Didn't play at all last year, injury and illness, but the kid is an absolute jet. I think you get about 15s about him for the Rising Star at the moment. And my mate is he'll play a fair bit of footy this year with the Hawks, and I am going to back him to win it.
There you go. We've got a price about something for Hawthorn. A couple of week-to-week trends that are worth noting. Hawks have covered 10 of their last 15 when they've gone on the road as favourites, and it's also been 10 of 15 to the over in that same situation. And one thing that I think you've touched on there, and it's kind of important in thinking about the likelihood of Hawthorn three-peating or the same sides basically ending up back at the top. Those of you who got the punter's guide in 2013 and 2014 will be familiar with our snakes and ladders theory. It lasted a good 10, 11 years. And it went arse up last year. For the first time since 2002, less than 3 sides went more than 4 wins in each direction. North went up by 4 wins, and that was it.
Wow.
That's
probably why we don't have a book deal now.
I think one of the key things to think about, particularly when you move to an 18-team comp, is the way talent is redistributed from top to bottom gets a lot thinner.
Mm.
With 2 extra sides in, particularly while they've still got certain expansion rights. And as a consequence of that, it's actually much harder to get from the bottom back up. You know, you think about pre-season previews, you talk about a side like a Melbourne or a Carlton or a Western Bulldogs or a St Kilda or anything. They are a long, long way away from being a 12 to 14 win side. And that what Absolutely. Hasn't always been the case. You can previously be a side that's really bad and within 2 or 3 years be a side that's actually quite competitive.
Well, you look at Hawthorn as an example. 2005, Hawthorn was second last and I had 4 wins for the season. They got a priority selection the next year. And they won that was in 05, won the flag in 08. So certainly were able to turn around. I guess the only one in recent memory has been Port Adelaide that have been able to do that. But they had the list there. Mm. It was just getting someone in that could actually get the boys to play for them.
Exactly.
Was the only thing there, so.
So we have done a little bit of tinkering this year. We have retained the snakes and ladders theory, but rather than a 4-win shift constituting a snake or ladder, we've moved that down to a 3-win shift. So
I'm only notionally involved in this, I'll let you guys know. I'm doing this under sufferance. No.
Greg doesn't believe in stats. Those of you who've listened to the podcast last year or had a look at the columns in previous years, it'd be well across that. So we're not going to do this as a ladder 1 to 18 per se, because we've landed on a number of teams on the same number of wins, and guessing percentage at this point of the season is not really a way to make money.
Absolutely.
So we've got three teams on 17 wins. We've got Hawthorn, Sydney and Port Adelaide, who would be a ladder side by moving up by three. We've got Geelong as a snake side coming down from 17 to 14, but still in the mix with North Melbourne. Fremantle we've left on 14, but I think that's 14 with an asterisk. They could quite easily drop to our next batch.
That could be 12 without too much drama.
Yeah. We've got three sides with 13 wins, so essentially we've got one win splitting fourth and ninth. Sides on 13 wins, Richmond, Gold Coast and Adelaide. We've got Essendon with 10 wins, but who the hell knows? Anywhere between two and...
You could cross that zero off or cross that one off pretty easily too in a couple of weeks' time, I'd imagine.
So. Yeah. Then we're into the sides that we really don't think are much over making the eight at all. West Coast with 9 wins.
I think that one is probably an adjustable one as well. West Coast probably 7 wins. I think we'd nearly top them out now with the McKenzie information in mind and those other bits and pieces. I don't see them getting to 9 wins anymore. So they're a snake side for me.
Which might then shuffle the decks a little bit. We've got Collingwood as a snake side with 8, Carlton with 8, potentially Brisbane and GWS, who we'd originally marked as 8. They might be beneficiaries either with the West Coast reduction or depending on what happens with the Bombers. They're 8, potentially 10.
Yeah, absolutely. Both of those sides could get to 10 wins with Essendon with a reduced list or however that's going to wash out. West Coast being generally shit and Fremantle possibly not living up to expectations as well.
Melbourne we've got as a ladder side going up from 4 to 7. If they don't, I don't know what the hell they're going to do. And the Dogs going the other way as a snake side from 7 down to 4 and fighting it out with the Saints, who've also got 4. Not least because they play each other, and I think they've got Melbourne each as well. There's a few sides where a few games where the really bad sides play each other twice and someone's got to win them.
Absolutely. I mean, they could both finish 5 or 6 wins, but ultimately it's...
That'd see them out. You couldn't see more than 6 for either of them.
I don't see either of them. I think 10 wins between them absolutely tops those two sides out, basically, this year.
So there you go. We've hopefully found you a couple. We'll be back again on the Wednesday night before the season proper begins with the Round 1 podcast. Same sort of gear as every other year. Quick plug this year, Flemington Sportsbet, who you'll recall from the Punter's Guide, Jason Sylvester was the bookie in those two publications, is on board. And this year he's doing $2 lines for both NRL and AFL, maximum bet $100. But if you bet more than that, you have your 100 on at the $2, you go and have the rest on somewhere else at $1.92 and get a better average price. You don't care about stats, so that's not your problem, but...
I care about no rake. I care about that.
Absolutely. There you go. A bookmaker with no rake. You should definitely get on board there for your first $100 of no rake. So we'll be quoting the Flemington Sports Bet prices throughout the year. And
that's probably going to do wonders for the percentages as well. Why didn't you do that last year, Cranberry? That would have been bloody awesome.
Oh, for the last 3 years. We've been giving away 4% a game or whatever.
Could have bought an aeroplane.
Wouldn't have been a good one.
No.
Alrighty. Good luck and good punting, folks.
See ya.